people.
This conference.
This is a book that Sam Castor has been quoting at some of the events. So I picked up on it and I said, you know what, let's take a look at that book. And I actually bought it. It's the first time I started buying books by email. You can buy the e-books, and that's a whole treat because it's a whole different way of reading books and getting into them. And it's really kind of interesting to me that I'm clicking on and highlighting books on a computer. It's a whole new process, so bear with me as I review this with you. You know, we built the outline, but it just was kind of a whole new thing for me to do an ebook. It's a joy if it's a way you guys want to buy books too. I know that a lot of times I'd rather have a book around so I can share it with people after I read it, but in some cases that doesn't have much application, so it's kind of a great way to get books where you don't have to actually physically get them in the mail, pay for shipping and all the other things that go along with it. But this is a book about, it's about how social entrepreneurs create markets and that change the world, and that's the subline to it. Terrific book. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm not saying that everybody needs to read it. I think that after you get the outline and hear this call, perhaps you get the full gist of it. But if you like stories about social entrepreneurs, I'm going to tell you this, between this book and the other book on social entrepreneurs, what a blessing it is. It's just, I find it that it's very motivational and inspirational to read a book that talks about what other people are doing in the world and the incredible impact they're making in their lives. And so that's a joy of reading a book like this, because this one also had numerous stories like the social entrepreneur book had about how people are taking social entrepreneurship to another level. So, but I probably wouldn't buy, if you haven't bought the social entrepreneur book yet, I probably would buy one or the other. They both kind of tackle the same arena, but in a little different way. This one's more business-oriented because it's not just limited to social entrepreneurship, although I can tell you 90% of it is tied in that direction, whereas the other one is totally dedicated to social entrepreneurship. But it talks specifically about Ashoka, which is one organization, probably what you could almost, will probably be depicted as one of the founding fathers of social entrepreneurship, Ashoka. And this one more goes into, just peeks at Ashoka in a little bit, but goes after a lot of other social entrepreneurs and people that do it in hybrid type structures instead of just through what Ashoka is, which is more of a nonprofit type organization. So the inspiration for the title, of the book, The Power of Unreasonable People, really came from George Bernard Shaw, and it's a quote that Sam Castor uses frequently. He says, "The reasonable man adapts himself to the world, whereas the unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself." So there's a big difference, and that's why we focus on unreasonable men, because unreasonable men are people that want to change the world. They look at the world and they see the inadequacies we have in 101 different areas, and they say, we want to make a difference. So it's the entrepreneurs that these entrepreneurs are doing early market research on some of the biggest opportunities of the coming decades. So they tend to be visionaries. They tend to be people that see things down the road. The social and environmental entrepreneurs share the same kind of characteristics as all entrepreneurs, namely they're innovative, they're resourceful, they're practical, and they're very opportunistic. So those are some of the main characteristics that we see in these social and environmental entrepreneurs. Many exploit new ideas, they establish new ventures to deliver goods and services that aren't currently supplied by existing markets. And as we saw with the social entrepreneur book, they would never be, because there's not enough economic stimulus to do that from a business, pure business perspective, and from a nonprofit perspective, the nonprofits don't have enough funding or consistent funding to allow them to really create the change necessary and create this difference in the marketplace. Many of the most interesting experiments take place in the middle ground. In other words, are hybrid organizations, because it has to be a different kind of organization to create a different kind of result. We can't create the results that we're looking for in these massive changes in these global problems by relying on old systems, because if old systems would create the proper results, then they would have already been created. It's a logic argument. It's a reasoning argument. So we know that the formal business structure or the nonprofit structure or the governmental structure as the three major structures that we have in our society today are not going to create the results that these social entrepreneurs and environmental entrepreneurs are after, because they haven't done it yet, and they have too many constraints within their own organizations to create those. So when they talk about hybrid organizations, we're talking about hybrid organizations that are combinations of business and social and you know, unique entrepreneurs that are forming partnerships with businesses or partnerships with nonprofits and many different ways to create value. And as they talk about hybrid, they talk about blending value, and where better-off customers sometimes subsidize less well-off customers. That's one of the models that's out there, where a better-off customers pay a little bit more so that the less-off customers can pay a little bit less. Taking on new models that work, and they create value in multiple dimensions. So it's about creating value in economic dimension, in the social dimension, and environmental. So as you know, businesses tend to focus on one. Nonprofits tend to focus on one, and the government tends to focus on one. So this is a way to cross all these different dimensions in one entity. And he looked at, he says, what causes these people to move on is just a simple question, what motivates you? Because most of social entrepreneurs or environmental entrepreneurs they come from a position of just selflessness, and they go, you know, they have some passion inside of them that totally motivates them, and it's an undying passion. Of course, for a lot of us, sometimes we develop a passion, but we don't know how to solve it or how to meet it or how to do something about it, so we let it die. Well, these people are people that aren't ever going to let it die. It drives them intensely. And I put a quote in your outline this morning that talked about, you know, one of the quotes from one of the entrepreneurs. He says, my reasons are purely selfish. Now, I talked to him about selfless. But selfish, and I figure I've been put on this earth, if you call this selfish, I've been put on this earth for a very short period of time. I could apply my talents to making lots of money. But where would I be at the end of my lifetime? I would much rather be remembered for having made a significant contribution to improving the world into which I came than for having made millions. I think that's a great quote. Now, and understand that a lot of these social entrepreneurs, you know, a lot of them are young people that really are driven, but some of them have come out of a business world where they've already made their millions, and they're just like going, what am I going to do with these millions except make this a better world to live in? So it can be driven by both kinds, but a lot of these people are just saying that, you know, in their 20s, they're just, as we see at Generation Y, a lot of these kids are going, I'm not about my parents' business. I'm not about making millions. I'm not trying to make a quick buck. I'm not trying to find the newest, best way. I really want to make a difference in this world. And that's the social, the visionary, the social consciousness that's controlling versus a goal to have certain amounts of money. And capturing the common characteristics of such extraordinary people, diverse people, is tough. But he set forth a bunch of them in the book, and I wanted to review them with you briefly about what are the most common characteristics of these social entrepreneurs that are out there that being unreasonable in their approach. And then we'll talk also about what makes them unreasonable. But some of their qualities are they try to shrug off the constraints of ideology or discipline. In other words, they don't let the environment of discipline or ideologies be constraints in their thought processes. They think outside the box. You could put that's probably the best way of describing that. They always think outside the box. Because what happens is that if we stay in the box, our thoughts and our processes will be limited by the box. They identify and apply practical solutions to social problems, combining innovation, resourcefulness, and opportunity. So they look at other things to combine instead of what's already out there. They look at what? Innovation. They look at different opportunities. They look at futuristic things instead of being limited by what's already in existence. They innovate by finding a new product, a new service, or a new approach to a social problem. Just like Sam, a new approach to a social problem. His whole concept of give for real. I mean, Sam is a classic social entrepreneur. We've always looked at Sam Castor as a visionary, and that's what most of these social entrepreneurs are. In fact, I think it's almost impossible to be a social entrepreneur without being a visionary, because the vision is what drives you, it's what motivates you, and it's about thinking outside the box and coming up with new approaches. And that's what visionaries are about. They think of new ideas and new approaches to conquer old issues. They focus first and foremost on the social value creation. So again, it's not about a monetary, it's not about a business, it's not about an economic value creation, it's about a social value creation. And it's that social value creation that is what drives them. That's what they're driven to. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't combine that social value creation issue with something that's monetary driven as well so that it can be self-sustaining. But first and foremost, the focus is on that social value creation. And then the willingness, they have a willingness to allow their ideas to be replicated, because the whole idea is to take this to the world, not just their own concept, but to have it widespread. They jump in before ensuring they're fully resourced. Now, I can raise my hand on that one. I mean, how many of us have jumped in before we're fully ready to go? And part of that is because social entrepreneurs are so passionate about what they're involved in that they feel like they're never going to be adequately resourced. So the idea is that we're going to move this forward and we're going to find the resources as we go, because they're very much of thinking on their feet type people. They have an unwavering belief in everyone's innate capacity. And that's cool, because they're getting people involved in these social entrepreneurial endeavors, just like the us involved with Manna Relief. It didn't matter what education or what background or anything, but we all can be involved because we all can make meaningful contributions. You and I are making meaningful contributions every day, every single time. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but ever since July kicked off, all the people that I've enrolled, each and every one of them, as I've enrolled new associates in Manatech, there's something inside my heart and inside my body that's very different than ever before in Manatech. It's a newness about it that just is, it's such a blessing to think that here's a new person, I get them on automatic order, and guess what? Guess what? We've just contributed to another child, and it's just there's some kind of softness to it. There's some kind of, and it's a softness of heart. It's a kind of a tenderness of heart that I feel that this is something greater than I ever imagined I was a part of in the past. It's almost like I'm contributing to Manna Relief every day of my life today, and it's a great. And just to share with you a little bit, and this is a little off the track, but I had a conversation this morning with my stepdaughter, and we talked about how we're educating the four grandkids who are 9, 7, just turned 6 and 2. 9, 7, 6, and 2. And the 7-year-olds are going to turn 8 soon. So they're like 2 years apart, year and a half apart, each of them, except for the last. But the beauty of being able to educate these kids is they get their boxes of Manna Bears and Phyto Bursts every month. And I talked to Jennifer about how we educate them about what they're doing by eating these products and getting these products each month and the purchase of these products and what it's creating in the world. And it was just a great conversation we had, and how we're going to help educate them by, you know, making sure they understand the little, you know, cards and notes that are written in the boxes so they know that they know what kind of contribution they're making in this world. Because bringing that kind of social consciousness to a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old or 9-year-old, I mean, that's what we need to start doing to drive this as to be a worldview that we take. I mean, a worldview for all of us, not just for some of us. So show a dog determination that pushes them to take risks that others wouldn't dare. In other words, they don't see a comfort zone. They don't have one. They're willing to take risks beyond their wild. They balance their passion for change with a zeal to measure and monitor their impact. They have a great deal to teach change makers in other sectors. In other words, they contribute in many ways, not just in their own endeavors that they choose. And they display a healthy impatience. A lot of these characteristics I really relate to. Sometimes not in a good way, but they don't do well with bureaucracies. And I think that's true about a lot of entrepreneurs. That's a lot of reason why people step into entrepreneurship, because they don't deal well with the bureaucracies. I recognized myself early on in my first few jobs. It was very difficult for me because I wanted to be in charge. I wanted to be in control. I didn't want somebody else telling me what to do. I wanted to, you know, do things my way and go off in directions that were socially conscious, you know, had a social consciousness to them. And I didn't always get their responses I wanted from the people I worked for. So it was pretty clear to me early on that entrepreneurship was going to be something I was going to be actively involved in my whole life, which is really, you know, setting up my own law practice, starting my own business. All the things I did in the corporate and legal arena were also very entrepreneurial as well. These things are incredible, and the idea of impatience that bureaucracy causes those problems and constraints around it. But one of the things, this is a quote I took out of the book because it was cute. It said, but they are crazy like proverbial fox. I mean, they look for and often find solutions to insoluble problems in the unlikeliest places. I mean, Sam finding a solution to global malnutrition through Manitech. I mean, that wouldn't, you wouldn't typically go to a corporation. This is what some of you perhaps don't appreciate as much as I do. You wouldn't typically go to a for-profit corporation to solve global malnutrition, right? For-profit corporations don't typically solve global problems, so that's not a typical thing. So you go to unlikely places. They're driven by a passion to expand business thinking to reach people in need. So they take the business thought process, but they're applying it in a social consciousness manner. So it's business thought processes in a social consciousness. Thus, many are pioneering in helping map out future markets where most of us would only see nightmarish problems and risk. And that was a big statement to me because I think a lot of people in Manitech do the same thing. We start looking at Manitech or looking at our business, and what do? We come up with the negatives instead of looking at the unbelievable possibilities. And that's, we need to focus on that. We need to get out of our doldrums, get out of our stuff, get out of our stuckedness, get out of the ruts we put ourselves in, because really it's a choice, and start focusing on what? The great future that we have, the possibilities that are out there. And Manitech has a phenomenal possibility for all of us. But we've got to open our eyes to it, and we've got to grab onto it and run with it. And we've got to be a believer. We've got to set that path, our brain, and what we believe. The magic of believing is so crucial for us. So, you know, it's not getting stuck, and that's what these ruts are, nightmarish problems and risks. Those are people who focus on those are in a big rut. Social entrepreneurs and these environmental entrepreneurs are not focusing on the problems. They're focusing on solution all the time. It's their natural beingness. Let me see if I have one of the things. One of the things that was said in the book too. It said that with one of these guys, he said, once I found my way, I wanted to generate a shortcut for many intelligent, educated, poor young people, so they could generate companies of their own and create new leadership for our society. So instead of spending my money on luxuries or vices, I began to invest in people in the belief that my money could be useful to others like me. It was an incredible process. Rincon is the one who was writing this up. He talked about his Parquet Soft as a social initiative that happens to use science and technology as a vehicle. And he used it as an objective to stimulate democracy and social justice. And the way he did it is through the inclusion of previously marginalized young people living in low-income communities and transforming them into protagonists of their own enterprises. So it's about building up people to be, what, protagonists of their own environment and their own enterprises. And that's one of the things that we talked about. It's about how we take people that are marginalized and we build into them a belief of making the greatness out of what they're involved in and what their environment is. And that's what social entrepreneurs do. Now, when we look at these people that are taking these kind of actions and risk takers and these guys that are building solutions out of air, coming up with solutions out of air and some of the most unlikely places, why do we consider these people unreasonable? And there's a whole chapter that went through why they're unreasonable. And I'm just going to go through some of those issues with you. They're unreasonable because they want to change the system. Their power derives from the fact that they spot dysfunctionality in our current system. And boy, oh boy, do we not have plenty of that in our world today. And we don't have to look far. We can look in our own backyard. We have so much dysfunction in our economics. We have so much dysfunction in our healthcare. We got dysfunction in the educational system. We got dysfunction in our political system. We have tremendous dysfunction. So they spot dysfunction, and unlike reasonable people who accommodate themselves to the status quo, and we've been doing that. That's the problem with the United States. I think we've been accommodating ourselves to status quo for so long that we're stuck because we're stuck in our thinking. Our pattern of thinking and our pattern of answers are coming from our past instead of a vision of the future. When you try to find answers from your past, your answers will never be adequate to solve today's problems because today's problems are based on new information. And our thinking patterns are based on old and past thinking. So it's about you know, trying to transition the system into something different and more functional state. And that's what these unreasonable people are, because they want to change the system. They're demanding change. And we can look at the Tea Party today, and we can say there's a group of unreasonable people. And in a way, many times they are unreasonable. And sometimes, for some of us, they might offend us in some ways and some of their thoughts and some of their ideas that they have. But one of the things that, you know, somebody, I was talking to somebody the other day about it, and I said, you know, in some ways, I'm excited about the movement. I don't like the hatred and the nastiness and some of the obnoxious natures, but I do like the idea of having an independent movement that's working outside the system, because our system is dysfunctional. I mean, if you want to look at Washington and you think it's functioning, we're crazy if we think it's functional. And it doesn't matter whether Republican or Democrats are in, it's dysfunctional. I mean, it's just... It's all you got to do is look at what's happened the last 10, 20 years, not just the last couple of years, of what's, you know, the people are unwilling to compromise and the ability to move this country forward in a way that could be significantly beneficial to all of us. But they're willing to change the system. So there's some fun aspects of looking at that as another, you know, another arena of unreasonable people. The second issue is they're unreasonable because they're insanely ambitious. And, you know, they're people who think we can. I mean, they do never accept the thought that it can't be done. And that's why they're insanely ambitious, and because nothing's going to stop them. You can't put a stop in their way, because they'll find a way to get around it and go on and make do and come with another direction. And when you read some of the stories of these social entrepreneurs, it's amazing the kind of roadblocks that have come up in their lives that they've been able to avert just because of their can-do attitude. Number three, they're unreasonable because they're propelled by emotion. They're unquestionably. Some of these people are very angry. They are concerned deeply about the loss of biodiversity, about the treatment of ethnic minorities, or about the fact that 750 million people worldwide are illiterate, and that 100 million children have no chance of ever going to school. Yeah, these people get angry, but their passion and their experiences turn them on to the cause and do not make them crazy, at least not in the clinical sense. And they're not crazy angry. They're just angry because they are so desperate for wanting change, because they see how horribly this direction of this world is going in many, many ways, and they're so convicted about making a change. So they get angry, as we all should, when we're faced with the challenges of trying to spotlight and get decision makers to tackle some of these problems. What's different is, though, is that their anger, their passion, isn't simply blown away as steam. I love this in the book. It's that instead they work out how to turn it into useful locomotion. Yeah, it's how do I take my anger and turn it into steam that produces energy that gets movement and gets changes being made. They're unreasonable because they think they know the future. Leading social entrepreneurs typically are brim with overconfidence, they brim over with confidence. In other words, like Sam Castor, he's tremendously confident. He knows that he knows that this can be done, and he's going to make it happen. I mean, nothing slows him down in his vision of what he's going to create through this social entrepreneurship with Manatech, and it's. They see the future. They see the concept of making this gigantic step in the right direction. And they know the best way to predict the future is to create it. And the best way to build momentum and attract funding and other resources is to develop and communicate a clear vision of how things might be different. And there's no question you and I are seeing a clear vision of how things can be different for these 5 million children who die on an annual basis. We get that picture clear. All you got to do is tell the story and watch people tear up, and they get the picture as well. So there really are, these conceptual innovators are revolutionaries. They break with the past. They're blessed with certainty and know what they want. And he says, you know, he compared them in the book to Bloom, like Picasso in painting, Mozart in music, and Orson Welles in film. They really blossom and bloom. They create things that no one else conceptualized beforehand because they go outside the box, right? There's another quote I put in there from the book. At the best, these such people see things others do not. They draw conclusions that others cannot. They instinctively reframe challenges as opportunities, looking well beyond today's horizons. In the process, they offer those in the mainstream a way of getting a glimpse of the social and environmental drivers that will shape the future. True. Huge. And that's what we see today in social entrepreneurship. And when you read that Harvard Business Journal, if you get a chance to read that, it's just amazing how they talk about this being the future. I mean, you watch this guy, Harvard University professor, just get up, lift his stakes up, and leave. A brilliant man has been teaching at Harvard for years, and he said, I'm out of here, and step into social entrepreneurship. And it's the vision. They're focused on, and many of them are focused on arenas that where the bulk of the world's populations are going to be by 2030. So when they are visionaries and they look at the future, they look at where is this country, where is this world going? And the bulk of the world's population in the 2030s is going to be in the swarming mega cities. Excuse me. Every year, some 70 million people leave their rural homes and migrate to cities. So it's estimated that by 2030, there will be some 2 billion squatters in the world. Think about it. 2 billion squatters in the world. Most living in what one of these authors or one of the social entrepreneurs called, referred to as shadow cities or mega slums. And that's what these social entrepreneurs are focused on, this bulk of world population and the movement it's making. It's why in the social entrepreneur book that we reviewed before, we talked about some of these guys in Brazil who are learning and teaching and training and came up with solutions on how to economically get electricity to the fields so that people could stay in agriculture because so many of the masses were migrating because they couldn't work the fields anymore because they couldn't get water to their fields sufficiently for cropping, and they needed electricity to do that, and it was impractical to do it based on the electricity flow in Brazil. And these guys came, I mean, this one man, he spent 10 years, and all he did was research, and he never gave up, and he accomplished it. And that's one of the ways that they're struggling with the problem that they saw, which are these mega slums that are existing because there is no way of life outside the cities. Sometimes because that we don't have we're not coming up with the answers to keep people in the suburbs. So number five, they're unreasonable because they seek profit in unprofitable pursuits. And that's why business hasn't gone after a lot of these pursuits, because they don't see any kind of money into it. So they work where entrepreneurs work in areas where there's partial or total market failure, which typically means it's impossible to make any sort of money people would expect to make in other areas of the economy. And we know, especially in capitalism, where we're driven virtually exclusively by the concept of money, making money, capitalistic, you know, economic growth and capitalism, these guys are results-oriented and bring business thinking to social value creation. That's not what capitalism is about. It's not about social value creation. It's about job creation, economics, money, and it's why it triggers greed in such a massive way, and we see that in the United States. And we've been, you know, subject to that, whether it's, you know, it's our guy, you know, Bernie Madoff, or, I mean, you know, you can look at it all across the board in all the realms. Why is it that, in fact, there was an interesting article the other day, I don't know if some of you read it, but there was a city manager in a town out in California, a small city, that was making his salary was $800,000 a year. And it was, like, ridiculous. It was just like all greed, and they started examining all the city manager salaries, and they found some ridiculous numbers. These are things that go unchecked, but it's all greed. It's all greed, and so we need the concept of social entrepreneurship. Greed isn't even it's not even a thought process, because most of the time we're going into markets where the economics is not even the issue. It's all about social value creation. And these people want to take the business concepts and replicate some of these in a social arena. And he said, we can create a powerful alternative to the orthodoxy of capitalism, a social consciousness-driven private sector created by social entrepreneurs. And that's really what he's talking about, a social consciousness-driven private sector, so that we can kind of counteract what we see created by just a strict capitalist approach. They're unreasonable because they ignore evidence. As Bill Gates is supposed to have said, he said, by the time there is a business case for action, it's likely too late. So they don't worry about the evidence and showing that now is the time. They say it's not about timing, it's about the time is now. Not now is everything, the evidence shows that now is not the time. It says, no, the time is now, where they're hurting people and they're dividing issues. The time is now. Social and environment entrepreneurs, they move because the market's not moving fast enough. Like with Microsoft, they move because the markets are moving rapidly. So for Microsoft, that was a movement cause. But it's because the relevant needs are so urgent. And when you look at these mega slum concepts, what's going to happen by 2030, and you look at some of the social issues that we have that are coming our way, it's a wonderful thing to know that we have social entrepreneurs and we have people that are visionary to think ahead to see how do we prevent these and how are we going to best live with these things as they come upon us. So they're unreasonable because they ignore evidence and they just move. They're unreasonable because they try to measure the unmeasurable. And so these entrepreneurs aim to provide forms of value that mainstream markets currently fail to recognize and reward. So they're totally outside the box of what normal. There was one, Greg Dees of Duke University had argued that markets do not do a good job of valuing social improvements, public goods and harms, and benefits for people who cannot afford to pay. And these are the kind of elements that are essential for social entrepreneurship because markets don't value them. By bringing natural, social, human, intellectual, and cultural forms of capital into the equation, social entrepreneurs aim to deliver real wealth to billions of people around the world who have so far been excluded from the benefits of what we know as a market economy. So they're going, again, outside the box. They're unreasonable, number eight, because they are unqualified. Most of the people that get involved in social entrepreneurship don't come with tons of degrees and tons of things. In fact, most of their degrees are in things that are totally contrary to perhaps what they're getting involved in. So it's not about degrees, and the credentials are altogether different than being qualified to advance massive social change. And he made a good comment that entrepreneurs are born, not made. One does not decide to be an entrepreneur. One is an entrepreneur. In other words, either you are entrepreneurial or you're not. And all these characteristics that you see if these fit you, is this something that's about you? We try to make people into entrepreneurs in Manatech, and I know that sometimes is very hard to get people to walk away from what they are. I think people can choose to be entrepreneurial, but I think most entrepreneurs in their direct talents and those initial characteristics, you're born that way. You come out of the womb that way. Where other people that are more structure-oriented and system-oriented, and they tend to sometimes get stuck in a system and instead of being driven by something that's greater than they are. So entrepreneurs are, it's important that we look at ourselves as entrepreneurs as we join Manatech and we take on a role, because entrepreneurship is what will help drive you that passion and allow you to be unreasonable. Because even in Manatech, if you look at what we do in Manatech, are we not unreasonable? We're asking, I can remember back when I first started, I was asking doctors to quit, prescribing drugs and start looking at alternatives. I was going into chiropractic offices and saying, you need to carry these products because of this, this, and this. A lot of my activity that I was doing and preaching and teaching and doing all the things that we're doing, I was being incredibly unreasonable. I was being unreasonable because we have fast food restaurants at every corner. So who am I, Mary Jo? Who are you on this call today? Feeling called to help people with nutrition and exercise and good diets and good great supplements and taking control of their health, when we've been taught in our society that we can eat anything we want because there's always a drug that's going to help us get beyond it. So we are contrarians in our society. But our contrarian movement is really growing. So we, in fact, just with what we share as Manatech, are social entrepreneurs. So it's terrific that we want to take on this role we didn't come into Manatech. I came into Manatech being a doctor, but a doctor of law. And I didn't have any medical background. I didn't even know what the pancreas was. I've learned so much over the last 12 years. It's been unbelievable how much information. In fact, some people say, where did I get my medical degree? And I laugh. I'm no more medical degree than the man on the moon, but the knowledge I've gained is immense in this area because it fascinates me. It's exciting. I'm passionate about it. So it's fun to gain all that information because we want to create something new and different. All of us would like to take this whole healthcare issue and say, let's wash ourselves of this, and you pay for the drugs that you have to take because of things that you could prevent. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? Like, you want to weigh 200 pounds overweight and have high blood pressure and high cholesterol because you want to eat the donuts? Well, then you pay for the drugs. Don't make society pay for that. Our own irresponsibility has created so much of our health disaster. And why not put some more controls about the ingredients that go into our foodstuffs? Oh, my gosh. So that we're not poisoning everybody every day by what they buy at the grocery store shelves instead. I mean, see, there's just huge arenas out there. That's our unreasonableness. So we're unreasonable, and we need to keep fighting for being unreasonable. Because if we keep striving to stay in the system, we won't create the results. So we've got to go out there and fight our fight, and that means every day we share being unreasonable with people. And I, you know, there's something that's kind of cute about this that I thought about as I was reading this book and thinking about how this applies to Manatech and what we're doing. And I started thinking to myself, what a great, you know, I bet we could come up with a great script about being unreasonable. You know, when you meet with people, why not even admit that you understand that this is social entrepreneurship at its best, because we're unreasonable. I'm not going to let you fall into the traps that our society has outstanding for you anymore. The traps of McDonald's, the traps of, you know, the stuff. In fact, the other day when I was working with a gentleman last week, he told me, I was out to lunch with him and signed him up, and he told me, he says, you know, my kids love McDonald's. And I go, wow, that's your legacy? And he looked at me and he was devastated. He knew what I was saying. You know, but the whole idea was like, why don't we be unreasonable? You're falling in the traps of society. Why not avoid the traps and the pitfalls that our country provides for us and be unreasonable? Okay, unreasonable people, I got to get going because I'm getting stuck. Oh, I got a lot left. I will try to get through as much as I can, but you guys, you're getting the gist of the book, hopefully. They're unreasonable because they refuse to be superheroes. Indeed, one of their most striking characteristics is their ready admission that challenges are way beyond a single entrepreneur, enterprise. So there aren't any superheroes in this business whatsoever. They're unreasonable because they are, well, unreasonable. And most of all things, that they get under people's skins. And what do I tell people to do all the time? I tell you to get under people's skins. You know, it's about us not worrying about what other people think of us. Remember that great book, What Other People Think of You Is None of Your Business? And I keep recommending that to people over and over again because too many of us want to be friends. We want to, oh, I don't want to hurt my friendship. I don't want to hurt my, I go, are you kidding me? The way you support a friendship is you get people to do things they wouldn't otherwise do without your involvement in their lives. Take on a new role in life and make a difference in this world instead of worrying about what other people think of you. My goodness. Do you believe in what you're doing? That's an interesting question. Because I think sometimes people worry about what other people think of them because they're not really entrenched in what they're doing. I couldn't be more entrenched. When I see the impact these products have, and being in Monterey, I saw a number of people down there that have had miracle stories with Ambertose because they've been on the products for 3, 4, 5 years. They thought Mexico was opening 5 years ago. Some have been on Manna Relief in Mexico for years. And it's amazing what these products create in people's lives. Are you kidding? I'm not convicted about what I do. I'm so passionate, I want to do it every moment. I want to make a difference in people's lives, and I want to be that thorn. I want to look at that guy who says his kids love McDonald's and say to him, so that's your legacy? I mean, I got to get people to think a little deeper than the shallow nature. Accepting the world the way it is unacceptable because our world is unacceptable in the condition it is today. They're unreasonable because they're unreasonable, so let's get unreasonable. Okay, the rest of the book focuses on how unreasonable entrepreneurs build their enterprises. They talk about different ways of building enterprises. So it's a great book for you guys who might be thinking about stepping out. And I mean, application-wise, could have some application in what you might want to do and conquer some other ideas. It talks about leveraging all kinds of resources. You got to leverage money for sure. You got to get support. You got to leverage from untapped markets. You got to leverage skills. You got to get people to contribute that have skills in different arenas because you're not going to come to the table because, remember, you're unreasonable because you come in unqualified, right? So you have to tap into other resources. So it's it's somebody who and Jean Baptiste Say, who's the guy who is credited with coining the term entrepreneurship, he says the very definition of an entrepreneur is someone who shifts economic resources out of an area of lower production into an area of higher yield in production. That's what he does. And then he also talks about in the book part two. There's three parts to the rest of the book. Part two investigates the implications of their work for future market risks and opportunities. And you know, today's social and environmental entrepreneurs see the possibility of helping people soar into the future where others only see insurmountable barriers. So again, it's all about that. Demographic opportunities are huge. We talked about that a lot, about human population. Our human population is reaching 9 to 10 billion sometime during this century. What does that mean for our planet if we don't start thinking outside the box, right? Financial opportunities. We have the greatest disparity of wealth that we've seen in the history of mankind. I mean, occurring in the United States as well. And he just gave some statistics in the United States. And he just talked about 2003. He said the United States, for example, the divide between rich and poor has been growing rapidly. And by 2000, specifically, you know, in the last 8 years, 10 years, by 2003, the top 1%, and this, I'm not getting political on this, people, but this whole tax cut thing for the rich and all this kind of stuff and trickle down, oh my gosh. There's never been such a trickle up that's occurred in the history of mankind as has in the last 20 years. Just look at the statistics of what's happened to the wealth of the country. By 2003, the top 1% of households owned 57.5% of corporate wealth. That grew 4% just in that 1 year. It went from 53 to 57 just in 1 year. So 4 or 5% of corporate wealth transferring to the top 1% of our population just in 1 year? Think of the transitions that are going on. And he used that quote in his book. Okay, so financial opportunities are huge because we see this incredible disparity of income, and it's growing. The gap is becoming humongous. Nutritional opportunities are there, huge in a way. We have phenomenal nutrition opportunities, and just, you know, we know the need for grain-based foods, yeah? I mean, that still staves off starvation, but what about nutrition-based foods that staves off malnutrition? So one thing to save from starvation, the other to save from malnutrition, and we're about the saving from malnutrition. Resource opportunities, they have talked about the global spread of intensive agriculture issues, those kind of things. Environmental opportunities are massive. They're everywhere. So we have a lot of ideas about what our environment changes in environment. Health opportunities, of course, that's us as well as nutritional opportunities. That's about us. He talked about statistics, and he talked about the estimated 4 million babies will not survive their first month of life. These are statistics. Again, this is what makes social entrepreneurs angry. At the same time, it was thought that more than 500,000 women would die in pregnancy during labor or soon after childbirth. Same thing. We get these statistics, and we go, oh, my gosh. What are we going to do about them? Yeah, we have a major international global health problems. And we have an opportunity today through Mexico to start in the Latin American population to really make a huge difference with Manatech. So how much fun is that? And people can go, oh, Mary Jo, but what about Herbalife? I mean, they got Herbalife. And I go, yeah, more junk. I mean, you got real products. It's so much fun to talk about real food technology. We don't isolate vitamin A out of a substance and put it in a pop bottle. We take plant sources, and we're using plant sources for our minerals. We want to give people real food. Educational opportunities are terrific as well. That's a huge category. We all need to recognize that educational, there's a huge disparity in educational opportunities. In fact, even in countries, you know as well as I do in the United States, we got massive educational discrepancies from those who have and those who have not. Just look at private schools versus public schools. Huge difference. So unreasonable entrepreneurs find opportunity in the chasms that separate the fortunate from the not-so-fortunate. But to cross the great divides, as has been discussed, what has to happen? Entrepreneurs must first understand and then try to reshape the thinking of those on the other side. And that's very hard. But it's, again, they don't care about hard. Nothing stops them. They're unstoppable. We know total equality will always be impossible, but the inequity on the scale now seen around the world is likely to prove unsustainable in a relatively short period of time in a number of ways. So we need to conquer that. Part three lays out some lessons of the leaders, so you can look at that, democratizing technology, changing the scaling solutions. And then he gave a list of 12 final notes of advice on what we can do in terms of supporting social entrepreneurship, what we need to do in terms of what's going on and fighting for social entrepreneurship. So it's like, how can we support social entrepreneurs? How can we step forward and make a difference ourselves? And you can look through this whole laundry list. You can go get the book. You can participate in this in a way that's significant. You can take on a new tact. You look at, you know, just like with my foundation, new tact. What we're not doing is we're, you know, with child abuse, if I keep having, you know, structures, social structures that take children in, that's really nice, but it's not solving the problem. So unless we start counseling and coaching families on better ways and doing it effectively in a way that's affordable, we're not going to solve that problem. So we have to start coming up with solutions that can solve problems that aren't being solved today because the system's not going to do that. So whatever your commitment is, I know one thing for a fact, that all of you on this phone call today have a commitment for global malnutrition as a social entrepreneur because you're part of Manatech. You're automatically part of that process. So it's like, how do I take that to its highest level? And that may be your stepping stone. That may be your goal. And that may be the direction you're in. And it surely is a huge part of my passion, a huge part of what I want, how I want to make a difference in this world. Because on my heart of hearts, people, I look at people as I give my talks in Mexico and here. I look at people and I say, you know, 5 million children are dying every year of malnutrition. And it's happening on our watch. I'm not going victim to what everybody else is or isn't doing. I'm suggesting that my life on this earth, the time I'm spending here, and now I'm 55 and I'm watching, I'm a member of a society that I helped create, and I'm watching 5 million children die of global malnutrition. So I want to do something about it. And that's what we all have a huge opportunity through Manatech to make a gigantic difference. So I just ask you to look at that, look at your heart, see where your heart is. Maybe you have another, you know, burning passion that's within you, but, you know, you just got to not let everything get in your way. For some of us, we can't even get Manatech going because we let so much of LIFE get in our way. Well, these social entrepreneurs, they're unstoppable. They're unreasonable. So maybe you take that list of unreasonables out of the outline today and you post it on a wall somewhere in your house about unreasonable. Where do you fit in those, and where do you want to be more unreasonable? And I just challenge you that by the end of this week, your spouse looks at you and says, you know what, honey, I think you're being unreasonable. But not in a bad way, in a way that you're trying to conquer something that she just can't fathom. Somebody else in your life, whether it's a spouse or it's a friend or it's a relative or somebody at church, you know, that's the blessing, that people look at you and say, you're unreasonable. And you can just smile and think to yourself, and I absolutely want to be unreasonable, because that's what's going to affect change in this country today. We may trip, we may fall, we may fail, but you know what? We get up and we keep going. And that's the courage we all need to have to make a difference in this world today. So, great little book. I hope all of you become extremely unreasonable people, because I will support you 100% in those endeavors to help change the world and be committed to change. We have so many ways we can do it, and there's so many, you know, applications out there. They're basically unlimited. All right, people, that's it on the book. Any comments, questions? Did any of you come up with passions in your heart as you were listening to this call or reading the outline, that maybe something that, are you quashing it because of the fear that you'll never do anything about it? I have a quiet group. All right, people, just pray about it, think about it.
Mary Jo? Oh,
yeah?
I'm committing to be totally unreasonable.
Okay, Ann, we look forward to your being totally unreasonable. Yay. Thank you, Ann.
You're welcome. Thank you. Mary Jo, it's Peggy, and I did not come up with new ones, but deepened the existing ones, and now I have to just figure out how to balance them so they don't compete but complement each other.
There you go. How's that? Good job. Yeah. And you might look at yourself and that might be unreasonable in and of itself to think that they're going to compliment each other. Well, let's get unreasonable and make it happen, right?
I'm sure my family would definitely agree with you.
Great. Great, Peggy. Great share. Okay.
Mary Jo.
Yeah.
It's Tony. You know, the people in your foundation,
yeah.
How are you getting all of them on the products too?
Sometimes I don't use it as a mechanism to promote the products, but sometimes we do. I mean, it's always available there if people have questions about nutrition, but I don't promote necessarily nutrition. And, you know, my coaching and my foundation with my coaches is really about supporting the family with what their issues are. And it's a phenomenal blessing. A lot of it today is financial. It's getting people into affordable housing. It's just getting people to think differently about where they are in life. That they, you know, it really is the same kind of thing. It's like a lot of people live unsustainable lives. Did you ever think about that? And it's about how do I help them understand what's going to be sustainable and start, you know, putting together a plan that allows them to have a sustainable life and something that has a potential of creating something great instead of what they've created in the past. But most of it's centered on what their focus is when they come to me. And then, you know, obviously getting God involved in the process, a lot of prayer, a lot of letters to God, all those things that help people move themselves and help, you know, it's utilizing the greatest being that exists to help people move, which isn't Mary Jo. I tap into the Almighty. But if nutrition does come up, yeah, I'll do it. But it's not, I can tell you, it's not a main source by any means of people that I enroll in my business.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
Thank you, Evangeline. Good talking to you. Good having you guys. Go ahead.
It takes the fear edge out. Because I have been unreasonable, but not enough. You know, I have backed off, and this just gives me a real push.
Uh-huh.
What I need to do and what God tells me to do.
There you go.
Regardless of the other.
When you hear from him, most of the times he tells us to be unreasonable.
Yes.
Because, you know, I really believe that the Lord, I think I shared this with all you guys one time before, but I was teaching a Sunday school class, my pastor's class, which is a ladies' class. And one day she said to me, when I was teaching the class, one of the classes, because I just take over for her when she can't be there, but this time she just had a hoarse voice or something, so she was in the class. So she asked me, when I was talking and giving my, you know, doing my lesson with the people in the class, which I always make very interactive because I believe that's the best way to teach. She said to me, she said, well, Mary Jo, she says, how do you know whether you're doing what God's will is in your life? And I thought about that, and I said, I didn't have an immediate response. And I thought about it for a second. I said, Lord, give me that answer. In my head, I just said, Lord, give me that answer. And you know what? You know what came to my head?
What?
When you're uncomfortable.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that intriguing?
Yes, yes.
But we know we're doing God's will when we're uncomfortable. So if that isn't about being unreasonable, I don't know. Seems to me that's about being unreasonable, right? Get out of that comfort zone and be unreasonable.
You know, we all listen to you, but we stop. And we need to listen and obey.
Yeah. I'm going to hear Evangeline. Let me convert that languaging and say, I love listening to you, Mary Jo, but what I need to do is listen and obey, not stop, okay?
Right.
Because we want to take personal responsibility for what we do in our own lives. We as a collective group don't do anything. I do what I do. You do what you do, and others on this call will do what they do. But you can say, I am seeing this, and I'm speaking for myself, but this is how I feel about it, right?
Great.
All right, Lady Cakes. That'll empower you to move forward.
Thank you.
You bet. Uh-huh. Okay, everyone, great call. And I'll talk to you next week. And if I get enough emails from you guys, if you want to do Lyft, I'll do that. If you think it's not a good idea, then let me know that too. I want to try to support you in every way I can and being the best you can be in your Manatech business and, more importantly, being the best you can be in life. All right, love you and talk to you next week.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.